Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Coffee Klatch. This is Marianne Russo. I'd like to acknowledge my co-moderators, Jane, Elise, Pierrette, and Chuck Wally, who's holding down the fort over on our Twitter tweet chat. We will be taking calls throughout the interview tonight. If you'd like to call in and speak to our guest, John W. Quinn, the number is 646-595-2881. And I had the pleasure of reading John's book, Someone Like Me, An Unlikely Story of Challenge and Triumph Over Cerebral Palsy, and it is fantastic. I really recommend that you get this book. It is so inspiring on so many different levels. And I just want to read one of the reviews before we go into the interview. This book is a must for every physician, therapist, and other caregiver that treats individuals with cerebral palsy or any other disability. It also is a must for every young person who ever looked at a goal and thought it was just out of reach. Perhaps he or she should look again. That review is by Edward A. Hurwitz, M.D. It is my pleasure to introduce John W. Quinn. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You have quite a story, and we're going to go into detail all of it. But you have cerebral palsy, and you basically lived your life with that being a secret that you kept, you and your family. And it's just, the story is just so inspiring. So why don't we just start off by, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what type of cerebral palsy you have and the physical and emotional pain that it causes you.
Well, thank you. I have a mixed mode type of CP, spastic and ataxia. And as far as the physical limitations, you know, I walk differently, I stand differently, I run differently, and I have to think about every movement of my body. Every time I want to walk, I say, okay, pick up your foot, set it down. So I have a running dialogue, even to this day, every time I move my body. And as far as the emotional pain, you know, growing up, CP, it makes you different. Makes you stand out. And as a young kid, really the last thing that you want to do, what I wanted to do was to stand out. And, so I was skinny, really tall and skinny. I think I weighed 120 pounds in junior in high school, walking with a limp, and made it tough. I was picked on, bullied, laughed at, you name it. I dealt with it.
Yeah, when you write about that in the book, it's just so heartfelt, and you can just really feel your pain through your words. I mean, it was very difficult, the road you took. And to complicate matters, you write about the secret life that you led. So, why don't you tell us about the reaction that your parents had, especially your father, when they got the diagnosis, and how that affected you? Because it's really very, very unique story, I think.
Thank you. You know, my father, He didn't want the CP put into my medical records. He was really adamant to the doctors at Children's Hospital in Detroit, where I grew up, about this. He was not successful in making this possible. But he didn't want me to be labeled as someone that's being handicapped or disabled. Now, I don't think he wanted me to use that as an excuse either, as I got older in life. But, my family, they didn't really keep it a secret. It just was never really discussed. It was just commonplace. Okay, John's got CP, and here's what we have to do. He has to go to Children's Hospital twice a week, and it was just the way Johnny had to deal with his life, and so it was tough. It was tough, but I lived a pretty normal life in many aspects.
Well, you had a very large family also. You know, we were speaking a little bit before we went on the air that you remind me so much of Jane Hotbed, one of our hosts. She has a very big Irish family also. So, why don't you tell us a bit about your family and, your upbringing, because that really is what I think, from what I got from the book, really molded you. I mean, you had just such fantastic parents.
You know, I have seven brothers and sisters, so there were eight kids in the house, and they're, can you imagine 10 people around the dinner table every day at 5 p.m.? And there's one bathroom in the house, so I tell everybody I joined the Navy to get some privacy. But, the life that I lived, my parents, any success that I have is due to the fact that my parents let me try things. You know, they didn't keep me in the corner. They said, go outside and play. And they let me find my own way in the world, and they let me experience things. And when I fell down, they said, get up. And, you know, that mental, it helped develop my mental toughness even to this day. If I want to go out and try something, I'll try it. I might do things differently, but, you know, at least try. And that was the mindset that my folks helped instill in me that I carry with me to this day.
And, you know, you had so much support from your siblings. I mean, how many do you have? 7 brothers and sisters? And
right.
You know, there's you write about, and you actually, there are pictures in the book which are great too, because you know how you just visualize things, and when you know, and I was visualizing what I was reading, and then I would turn the page and I'll go, wow, exactly what I thought. And you know, you wrote about this lot by your house, and you wrote the story about how you wanted to ice skate. So you know, you can just tell that story, because you know, your siblings were just so fantastic.
Thank you. You know, every one of my folks, my dad especially, he would pull out the garden hose and he would flood this patch of ground next to our house. We called it the lot. And one day, you know, I'd be watching my brothers and sisters ice skate on this ice, and I was like, hey, Mom, I want to try that. She says, oh, okay, sure. Found a pair of skates that fitted me, and my brother helped me lace up these skates really tight, and I wobbled out onto this ice, fell flat on my face, you know. So they said, all right, try it again, you know, don't push off so hard and lean back a little bit. But I just couldn't do it. What we wound up doing was getting a chain of brothers and sisters, and they said, all right, hanging on the coats, you know, the bottom of your coat. And they pulled me along, you know, Cracker Jack style there, and I was at the end of the line, and I learned how to skate. There you go.
You know, and I was thinking, you know, how did you, you know, you had so many restrictions, obviously, due to the cerebral palsy. You know, you must have created some restrictions for you. So how did you overcome, having all of these difficulties without accommodations, because your parents didn't even tell the school? Is that correct?
No,
like the school wasn't even aware.
You know, it didn't really, you know, in my case, the CP is relatively mild. But it was a challenging time for me. But I think my parents wanted me to be challenged. They wanted me to find my own way, and it was tough. But I, you know, with the support of them and my brothers and sisters, I found a way to do the things that I wanted to do. And, again, developing that mental toughness that they knew that I would need as I would get older in life and face the challenges that I face even today.
You also had visual difficulties, right?
Right. I suffer from, I can't pronounce it really well, strabismus, where, you know, CP affects the muscles in your eyes. And so my eyes would wander. So about every 10 or 15 years, I have to have my eyes, the muscles in my eyes tightened up. So I wore really thick glasses in grade school, and yeah, it was tough.
Did that affect you academically? Did you have difficulties with, you know, reading or comprehension because of it?
No, I did not. Where I suffered most, really, was in the mathematical field, where problem solving and things of that nature are really difficult for me, even now. But reading and comprehension, I love books. I love to read. And that was one of my escapes growing up, were the books that I read.
And, you know, I know that one of the questions as I was, you know, writing up some an outline for you, you know, I know you dislike the word disability.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, can you just explain to us, because a lot of people with different disorders, you know, say that to us. And can you explain to us how that word makes you feel?
Well, disability, you know, if you look at the word, I'm not an English major, but I know the word dis means lacking or without. So, okay, without ability. Now, everybody's got ability. You just have to find it. And so to slap that label on someone, I don't like it, because, again, everybody's got ability, and it just makes people less than, and it marginalizes marginalizes people, and I don't like that. It's just, come on. You know, we're all human beings trying to do the best we can in this world. Let's all take labels off people and help each other out to find our way in the world, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, everybody has their limitations in different ways. So
I can't do fractions, and I can't do household repairs, so I guess I'm disabled when it comes to fractions and you know, I'm fixing the dishwasher because, you know, I'm without ability in these areas. So, you know, that's my disability. Everybody's got a disability if you look at it.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I was reading the book, I was thinking, you know, it just seemed to me that your childhood and your teenage years were so difficult for you. And I wondered, as I was reading it, would it have been easier for you if people knew about the cerebral palsy, if the school knew, if the coaches knew? So, you know, thinking back, if you had to do it all over again, would you have kept it a secret?
No, that's a great question. And the answer is no. I would not have. As hard as my life was physically, it was even harder emotionally, because I chose not to tell anybody about my CP. Now, I wanted that level playing field. I didn't want any sympathy. I didn't want any special treatment. I just wanted to be, you know, a classmate, a sailor, and I wanted to be known for what I could do. And keeping a secret, yeah, it was tough. It was tough emotionally, and it almost brought me down. So, to answer the question, no, I would speak the truth. And I've been asked that question by many young people throughout the country who want to pursue a life, maybe in the military or whatever. And they ask me that very question. I say, tell the truth, because it's always better. It's always better to tell the truth.
You know, because there are just so many different accommodations that the children can get, and, you know, assistive technology today is incredible. So, you know, and you wrote, you know, I'm going to quote you from the book. You wrote, "By the time I was 13, I had built an invincible emotional wall to shelter me from most of the taunts and teasing about my physical imperfections."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so often I hear of one person that made such a difference in another human being's life. And then into your life came a man named, well, was a teenager at the time, Phil Freeman. And he actually is the man that you dedicate the book to. So who is he, and how did he impact your life?
Well, Phil Freeman is my best friend. I met him on the wrestling mat. He was an eighth grader. I think I was a seventh grader. And again, I told no one about the fact that I had CP, and I wanted to join the wrestling team. So my dad said, sure, go ahead. Just don't quit. You come home crying, saying that it's too hard, because we don't want to hear that. But after about 2 weeks on the mat, the coach could see that I was struggling. And so he called me into his office, and he says, you're cut off the team. You're not the locker. So I came out. I'm like, ah. Well, Phil happened to be the best wrestler on the team, and, you know, he said, what's wrong with you? I told him what happened. He looked at me for 2 seconds. He got up, walked in the coach's office. I don't know what was said. I didn't know until many years later. But he came out and he said, you're staying on this team. You know, and I got to stay on the team. He actually put it on the line. And what he said was, if this kid goes, I go. He works harder than anybody. He's got more heart than anybody. And he needs to stay here on this team because he pushes me. We were the same weight, so we wrestled competitively together during practice. And how about that? You know, an eighth grader putting it all.
What character?
Isn't that something? And he's my best friend. We talk every day, and it's an amazing, he's an amazing man.
It really is incredible because, you know, again, I really encourage you to get this book because, it, as I said, it's so inspirational. And, you know, the different people that, you know, you've come across in your life and, you know, Phil in particular, I mean, just what character that he had from such a young age. And, you know, I had to laugh, you know, at parts in the book because, you know, how in the world were you able to be on a wrestling team? You know, where did you find your physical and emotional strength, not even to get through the wrestling, but to persevere through your defeats? Because I think you were like 0-79 So where did you find that strength to go every day?
Well, that's a great question. Thank you for asking it. As tough as it was to lose, and I lost every match I ever wrestled, as tough as that was, I just loved being part of a team. I loved practice. I loved the time traveling from meet to meet and sitting in the back of the bus with the guys. It just made me feel part of. And, you know, the loneliness that I felt and the isolation of having cerebral palsy, when I was on the mat, I was the wrestler. And I was one of the guys, and that's why I stayed on the team. And also, I wanted to keep my word to my father, who told me not to quit. And I kept my word, and I'm proud of it.
Absolutely. It's just incredible because, you know, what you endured was, was amazing. And Phil knew, right? Phil was one of the only people that knew about your cerebral palsy. When did you tell him?
I don't ever remember telling him outright. I think him and my mom had a conversation somewhere maybe in my sophomore year in high school about my condition. But that was never really told to me until much later. Phil is doing great. He's actually a principal of a middle school in our hometown now and doing really well, affecting so many great minds today. It's wonderful.
Well, after you survived your childhood and your teenage years, which were very difficult, you decided that you wanted to be in the Navy. And in order to do this, you would have to obviously pass a physical exam. So you went through torture with physical therapy. So, you know, how hard did you train? How long did it take you? And then, you know, I'd like you to start telling us about, you're trying to get into the Navy and why. Why was this so important to you?
Well, I went through physical therapy all through grade school. It was something that I had to do in order to strengthen myself as a young kid. I did it twice a week at the Children's Hospital. And then my mom didn't think we were working hard enough, so she said, okay, we can do this at home. My physical therapy tool, was surgical rubber tubing, the real thick stuff. And the physical therapist, who I call the administrator of pain, she would tie it in a loop, and I'd place it over my legs, and I'd have to stretch it out and walk across the room, and I would put it over my forearms and stretch out my upper body, and then I'd have to sit and up with my back up against the wall in a timed sit exercise, trying to strengthen my hamstrings and quadriceps. And so I did this all through grade school. But when I tried to join the Navy, I actually failed the first physical that I took because I couldn't do one of the exercises that they wanted me to do. It's called the duck walk exercise, where you get down in the catcher squat and put your arms out and kind of waddle around in that pose like a duck. And I knew right away I couldn't do it. I tried to cheat, put in one hand down. But I was about 6'1", weighed 120 pounds. So I was pretty weak. Couldn't hold up my own body weight. So my body started trembling, and I fell over. Doctors came over. What's wrong with you? I said, nothing. Try that again. And I fell over again. I said, son, we don't know what's wrong with you, but we don't want somebody like you in the Navy. Go home. So, next day, down in my basement, after some prodding from my father, I started doing that duck walk exercise. And I did it every day for a year. And I went back. And I was the best duck walker in that entire building, I'll tell you. And I passed that physical with flying colors, keeping my CP a secret from the Navy officials. And off I went into my Navy career.
You know, you just said the words, you know, someone like you. And when you read that, when you come to that part of the book when, you know, Uncle Sam says to you that, you know, they couldn't use someone like you, you know, it just, like, it makes your heart stop for a second. So, you know, what were you feeling when they, you know, you heard those three words?
I was angry. I don't like people telling me that I can't do something. You know, they could have, you know, I said, all right, you know, go home and try, you know, and practice and come back. But they didn't even do that. We don't want somebody like you. And everybody in the room, I took the physical with 50 other guys, and they all saw me struggling, and everybody was laughing and pointing at me. So I was pretty ticked off. So that I used that anger, and it fueled me for the next year. I heard their voices in my head as I walked around my basement working on that duck walk exercise. I went out to prove them wrong. And again, you know, I like to be challenged, and I took it as a personal affront to pass this physical, and I'm able to do so.
Well, you know, you really just are so dedicated because, you know, you literally worked out every day just to be able to do the duck walk. So how did that duck walk work out in the second time you went for your physical?
Yeah, I was the best duck walker there. I was very fortunate in the fact that, you know, the doctors were different. I was really kind of nervous in the fact that, you know, this was the time before computers. So I was fortunate in the fact that my Social Security number wasn't flagged or anything like that. I was able to sail through, and I was a great duck walker. I can still do it right now if you want. So actually, somebody.
But we're not on video, unfortunately.
Somebody read the book yesterday, and they said, "Hey, can you still do the duck walk?" And I said, "Here, let me show you." And I got down and I did it for them, and they said, "That's fantastic." So there you go.
Well, I mean, it was no easy task. I mean, you know, you really wound up having an incredible career once you did get into the Navy. And, you know, you were able to defy all odds and become a senior chief petty officer in the U.S. Navy, which is, you know, quite the feat. So, you know, you've worked with the most respected units in the world. So, you know, tell our audience, you know, what you've done and the different units that you've worked with, because it's really incredible. Because, you know, and also tell them, you know, explain, like, you know, different parts of that you wrote in the book that, you know, being on a battleship, you know, it's not a luxury liner with, you know, elevators. So, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about your career and how you got to where you are?
Thank you. You know, I was able to serve on two aircraft carriers, nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, the Battleship Iowa. I worked with General Schwarzkopf on his staff down at U.S. Central Command. I worked with the Admiral of the Pacific Fleet in San Diego. And I'm a founding member or a plank owner of SEAL Team 3 in San Diego. So, yeah, I took the toughest assignments I could find. I stood every watch that every sailor stood, and was able to perform at the highest levels, and to make senior chief in 14 years, which is pretty quick in military rank. It's the second highest enlisted rank that you can hold. To be able to do that and to serve my country, it's a great honor. But it was tough. It was tough physically. To serve on an aircraft carrier or a battleship is maybe some of you listeners who have served on platforms and all. It's physically demanding. You do a lot of walking. You're up and down steep ladders, and you know, the ship goes through the water, and you're pitching and rolling, and you're standing watch. So, you know, when I say standing watch, you're literally standing for 4 hours at a time, maybe 8 hours if you have to do back-to-back watches. And, you know, even sleeping proved a challenge for me because I'm 6'3", and the bunks where you sleep, very confining, and I had to sleep in a position where I could never really relax, stretch out like you can at home. So it's a tough life, and it is a tough life. I have the highest respect for men and women who are standing watch for us. You give up a lot, it's worth the sacrifice. I'm sorry?
And you always really thrived. You know, you really aimed for the best. You know, even when you had to choose, you know, every 4 years, you know, where you were going to be going. I mean, you wound up with the Navy SEALs. You know, and it just seemed that everyone had such admiration for you and really, you know, were just pushing for you. It was just incredible, the camaraderie that you had, you know, except for the boot camp.
Boot camp was a challenge, but, you know, to go to your point, that's one of the highest honors that I could have in my career, was to be known as a great sailor. You know, to be asked, hey, can you serve with me on this ship, or can you come to San Diego or Norfolk and serve on this platform, and to be requested by name. It's a great honor. That's one of the reasons why I kept it a secret. I didn't want to be known as that sailor with cerebral palsy. I wanted to be known as a great sailor. And to have men and women who served with me call me the finest sailor that they've ever met, I take great pride in that.
No, it's just incredible. You know, it's and like I say, you know, as I was reading the book, I kept saying, you know, this all came from those formative years, and just the way that, you know, your father would never allow you to be considered disabled. And
right.
You know, it's just amazing, because, you know, you lived up to you know, his expectations of what you were going to be able to achieve. It was amazing.
And my mom too, she was tough. You think my dad?
Oh,
was tough.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, my mom, she was tough, and excuses in our household, you know, they were few and far between. So yeah, I attribute a lot of my success to my parents. You bet.
And, you know, even though this is, you know, a biography, you know, as you're reading it and, you know, you're talking about the different people in your lives, it's almost like a novel, because it's just so incredible. And you, like, fall in love with these characters. Like, I fell in love with your parents and your siblings. And, you know, you just characterize everyone so well in it. But there did come a time that, you know, the challenges did start to get the best of you. And you had a lot of losses. You know, your brother committed suicide, and you lost both of your parents. And, you know, alcohol and depression set in, and you were self-medicating. So you wrote about using a technique called compartmentalization. So tell us about that and what you were going through, and, you know, how you got yourself out of it.
Well, you know, compartmentalization actually was the way that I deal with pain. I learned that technique with the Navy SEALs, who I saw these guys doing 500-600 push-ups at a crab stop without even thinking about it, and I asked them about it. I said, how can you do that? I said, you have to use your mind. So I use compartmentalization to take the pain that I feel every morning, and I visualize a strong metal box, and I put the pain in a box where nobody can touch it. But to go to your point as far as alcohol, yeah, I used alcohol. That was my coping mechanism to deal with the pressure and the stress that I placed on myself. And I really started to look forward to getting to the bar at night and sitting there where nobody could, you know, hey, stresses of the job, could just leave them alone. And I just wanted to drink. And you know, that was how I ended my day, many a night. And
were you trying to kill the emotional pain or the physical pain?
Well, I think a little bit of both, actually. The physical pain was tough, but I think it was more of the emotional pain, because I never had anybody, because I had kept my CP a secret, I didn't have that confidant saying, hey, I understand you've got CP and it's tough. You know, let's talk about it. You know, so that was a heavy burden for me emotionally to carry. Keep that secret. So alcohol proved to be the mechanism that I used to relieve the stress that I was under. And it almost brought me down. I hit bottom and realized I needed to get some help. The Navy realized that I was sick, and I got some help, and I haven't had a drink since it's been over 12 years now.
Congratulations. I mean, that's fantastic. Because you also had a family history of alcoholism. So, you know, there was a genetic component to it also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're right. So, I never thought I was an alcoholic. I just thought I drank too much. I'm going to find out that, I'm an alcoholic, you bet.
Well, you know, it's just been amazing what you've overcome. And, you know, what is your life like now? I mean, you know, you had such a... you know, such an amazing career, you know, so and you decided to write this book. So, you know, what is your life like now that you're retired and, well?
Well, you know, it's been great. It's an exciting time for me. I'm starting to get out there and do some traveling and meet some people. I was actually the commencement speaker at my old high school. Back in June, I went back 30 years to the day that I graduated high school. And here's this kid with cerebral palsy, retired Navy senior chief, walking up to the podium, addressing the crowd. And had the opportunity to speak a couple months ago at the University of Michigan. So I love the ability to get out there and share my story with people. And I think that's my life's work, and I hope to pursue it into 2011.
You know, as I was reading the book, I said to myself, you know, how brave you had to be, first of all, to keep this a secret and to, you know, even go into the Navy. And, you know, you also wanted to go back to that question, because I don't think we went into that as to, you know, why you were so adamant about getting into the Navy. But, I just say to myself,
Hello?
Hello. Sorry, I got knocked off the air. That's the first time that's ever happened. I apologize. So you know, you were very adamant about going into the Navy. What was the reason that, you know, because I know you were going to go to college and that didn't work out for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why did you go after a career that just seemed so unattainable?
Well, again, I think it goes back to my folks who let me try anything that I really wanted to do. Now, I had two older brothers that had served in the Navy before me. And, you know, I was always reading books about men and women who would do traveling to foreign places, and I would read about Hong Kong and Israel and Egypt and all these exotic locations. I thought, hey, well, that sounds pretty good. But plus, I was an 18-year-old kid. I needed direction and some guidance in my life, and I knew it. So I thought, okay, let's give this a try. And that's really the reason why I wanted to do it. And once I failed that first physical, then I got angry. Like I said, I got angry. I wanted to really prove a point to everyone that I could do this. And but once I got into the Navy, I found out that I loved it. And you know, it was exactly what I needed at the time in my life.
What would happen now if someone wanted to enlist that had cerebral palsy, a mild form like yourself?
That's a great question, and one that I've asked Navy officials myself. And they said, John, you know, we treat each case separately on a case-by-case basis. So as long as the person can hit the standard, both physically and mentally, we will let them in. And I'm grateful to hear that. I don't know if they're telling me the truth, but I have feeling that they are.
As I was reading the book, you know, and several of your physicals, you know, it seemed very vague whether the doctors actually knew that you had cerebral palsy, because, you know, you went through many physicals during mm-hmm. the 20 years. Do you
mm-hmm.
think that in some cases the doctors knew and they turned a blind eye because you were just such an incredible, you know, sailor?
Maybe. I talk of my first reenlistment physical, and for your listeners who don't know, once I decided to make the Navy a career, every time I wanted to reenlist, every 4 years, you have to take another physical. So my first reenlistment physical was with SEAL Team 3, and the doctor, I think he kind of knew, because he looked at me and he said, are you hiding something from me? No, sir. And he said, I'm going to let you reenlist. You better make something of yourself. Again, I think your point is a good one, where I got really good at my job. I think some things might have been overlooked, but I avoided doctors, and even when I was sick, I think I have the thinnest medical record in the history of anyone in the Navy, because I didn't want anybody poking and prodding and giving me a thorough physical, because I didn't want to be kicked out for what I thought might be a false enlistment term.
And, you know, I don't know much about cerebral palsy. I was hoping that Jane was going to be able to call in. But, you know, I was wondering if stress affects the severity of your physical symptoms.
That's a great question. Thank you. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. When I'm under stress, my body reacts in a way that, you know, I start shaking, and I can't control it. Even when I'm tired, my body, my leg muscles, they twitch. And I have a tendency when I'm really tired to maybe drag my feet behind me a little bit. So I have to be, had to be really self-aware during my entire career of how I stood in my posture and always being on guard and keeping my guard up whenever I was.
That had to just be exhausting. I mean, just the you know,
yeah.
Because I mean, you had tremendous responsibility and stress in what you were doing. So, you know, that had to be exhausting. How did you explain your fatigue and your gait and your physical difficulties when people would ask you? I mean, all even as a child, a teenager, as an adult. I mean, how did you explain it to people? Or were you able to hide it that well?
In the military, I would say, "Hey, I got hurt in boot camp," which is true. I developed blood poisoning in my foot in boot camp because my left foot is a size 10 and my right foot is 12 and a half. And doing doctors, the military boots didn't fit so well, so I got blood poisoning. But, I learned that if you got really good at your job and I was able to do that, people didn't care. They just wanted to know that you could do the job, that you could stand the watches, that you could grab a fire hose and fight the fire if you needed to, and do all the things that every sailor was able to do. And I was able to do that, and once I proved myself, I had comments and those kind of things, they went away.
Yeah, you wrote in the very beginning of the book that when you were looking for books for yourself to read, that there were a few that you found, you know, that were very good, but basically you didn't find anything. And that was really, what drove you to write this book. So why did you write it, and how has it been received by people in the armed forces?
Well, one of the reasons why I wrote the book was to give people hope. I'd met a couple, two or three, Phil, my best friend, and they, this couple had a son, who has cerebral palsy. So Phil called me and he said, "Hey, he's coming to my school. You need to meet him." And so I met his parents, and they looked at me in such a way that I don't believe that they had ever really seen an adult with CP before, who was successful in living his life and doing all the things that, you know, that I was able to do. So that got me thinking that, hey, you know, maybe I need to put my thoughts down on paper. And then I went to the library and I looked to see, you know, what books were out there about an adult living his life with cerebral palsy. And I didn't really find what I was looking for. So I knew that there was a need out there for it. As far as what how the armed forces has received my book, it's been great. It's been overwhelmingly well, especially from, again, the men and women who served with me and know me personally. It's been a fantastic response. And as far as from official Navy folks, I haven't really gotten that support yet, but that's okay. It's not a military book. And it's not just a book for people with muscular disorders. It's for anybody who wants to read an inspirational book. So I get great joy in the fact that, you know, I've had 15-year-olds write book reports on my story, and I had a 92-year-old man a couple months ago come up to me in the gym with four copies of my book under his arm and said, "You need to sign these books for me." "Yes, sir, no problem." You know, so I've got 15 to 92 covered in age category. I'm doing pretty good.
You know, to me, this book really, as you said, it's not, I mean, obviously, you know, the basis is cerebral palsy, but this is a book about overcoming adversity in any way. I mean, it really is. It's just about, you know, being able to accomplish what you just never believed you had in yourself. So, well, it's fantastic. I would like to just ask you, for our parents that have children with cerebral palsy, what would you say to them what would you say is the is a way to help them encourage their children to challenge themselves?
Well, I would focus on their ability. You know, everybody has ability. So find the ability in your son or your daughter and nurture that. And don't focus so much on the disability, but focus on the ability of the child. And one of the great things of my book and talking to the doctors that I've been able to talk to, it's actually changing the way that doctors are practicing medicine. You know, so many parents have come up to me and said, you know, the doctors said my son or daughter would never be able to do X, Y, or Z, you know, live a normal life, walk without assistance, or whatever it might be. And, you know, he or she is now surpassing those expectations. So these doctors are now thinking, hey, maybe we're setting the bar a little too low. And I agree with that. We need to raise the bar up. And we need to challenge one another to greatness, because great things are possible if you're willing to work hard and persevere and not give up. And for the parents especially, don't give up. There's always hope. You're never alone.
Fantastic. And, you know, I think that, again, that holds true with so many things. Just look for the abilities, because everybody has them. And, you know, now, I mean, like, as you said, you have high school students that have written essays about you. And, you know, I mean, what an honor. So for all those years that someone like me had such a negative connotation for you, you know, now through your telling your story, this lifelong secret that you've had, you know, now you have people wanting to say, you know, I want to be someone like me. So it's just incredible.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's been a really humbling journey. And who would have ever thought that something that was so painful and, again, kept secret for so long, it's helping people all over the country, all over the world. I'm really gratified by the response.
And you're also doing that with speaking engagements. So tell us about your speaking engagements, how people can get in touch with you. Chuck, if you could please post the John's website. It's johnwquinn.com, where he has all his information. And tell us about your speaking engagements.
People can contact me through my website. I'd love the chance to meet each and every one of you. If you've got a group or organization or a company who's looking for maybe an inspirational speaker, I'd love to hear my story. Just contact me through my website. There's a motivational speaker link or an email address where you can get in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. So I think this is, you know, what God put me on this earth to do is travel the country, and I look forward to, you know, the opportunities ahead. And even Hollywood is looking at this in a way of maybe putting it up on the big screen one day. So that's really
this exciting. Would be such a fantastic movie. I mean, this really, it would just be such a fantastic movie. I hope that happens for you.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. You know, it's been a pleasure having you. And I really strongly encourage everyone, I mean, not just parents that have a child with cerebral palsy. I mean, every parent should read this book, because it just is so inspirational. Someone Like Me, An Unlikely Story of Challenge and Triumph Over Cerebral Palsy by John W. Quinn. Fantastic book. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, Marianne. Have a good night.
You too. The hosts of the Coffee Clatch are going to be taking a week off. We're going to be spending some time enjoying our families, and we will be back on January 2nd, Sunday night. We're going to be doing our blog talk version of our Your Chat, which is whatever you need to talk about, what you want to talk about. And my co-host on Blog Talk that night is going to be Dr. Lynn Kenny, neuropsychiatrist, and she will be answering all of your child developmental questions. So I want everyone to enjoy their holidays. I thank you very much for your support, and we're going to have a fantastic 2011. As I end the show every day, you are your child's best advocate. If not you, then who? Become an informed, educated parent. Thank you for joining us tonight at the Coffee Clatch.